Hey, Three Song Story listeners, we love keeping this show free and easy to download for you. But to do that, we do have to remove the full versions of the songs from this version of the show. But if you want to hear the full versions of the songs in the interview, the way we did them in the studio, go right over to threesongstories.org or use WGCU's app and you can listen to the show exactly how we did it. Plus, you get to hear the song at the end of the show that each host chooses to tell you a little bit about themselves. All right, here's the show.
One, two, three. Welcome to our podcast called Three Song Stories. Our goal is to use music to get to know our guests. Three songs, that's all they get to choose from all the tunes that have crossed their minds and paths over the years. We ask for the three that most directly connect them to times and people from their lives to bring out the storyteller in each and every one of us. I'm Mike Kinnairy. Thanks for listening. My guest this episode is Bob Grissinger, best known by many as the man behind Bennett's Fresh Roast in downtown Fort Myers, which arguably makes the best darn donuts on the planet. He's also known by many listeners across Southwest Florida as C. David Bennett, one half of Bennett and Birch on Wink 96.9 FM. The two of them were heard weekday mornings for more than 14 years. Bob has a deep history with radio and music, and so I figure must have just had one heck of a time getting down to just three songs, and we welcome him now to find out which ones made his list. Hey there, Bob. How's it going?
I have recovered from the process of picking three songs that define my life. That was not an easy assignment.
You know, when your name popped into my head for this project, that I did that calculus, and I felt like you would have a hard time, and so I relished the thought of putting you through it.
Good Lord, I was in top 40 radio for 35 years.
You know, and I have to say, full disclaimer here right at the beginning before we get into the questions, I grew up listening to Wink 96.9, so sitting in a studio with headphones on, talking into studio-quality microphones with your voice, with your face, is fun and interesting for me.
It is a pleasure.
Okay, let's get to the questions. What is the first musical memory that flashes into your mind, like all the way back, as deep as you can go?
Well, my mom singing to me.
Okay.
She always sang a Rosemary Clooney tune. Boy, does that tell you how old I am. She loved the song Hey There, and she sang that to me all the time. I remember that really clearly. As a little tiny kid, I must have been 2 or 3 years old.
Do you feel like your memory is probably pretty crisp and accurate, or you know how early memories are? You feel like there's a little fantasticalness to it?
I was in college in the 70s. Now, what do you expect the answer to that question might be? Yeah, I guess my memory's pretty good. I'm 63, but I remember a lot. And I'll tell you what, choosing three songs for you today raised a lot of memories that were kind of buried.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It's interesting how you turn on a certain part of your brain all of a sudden and you're like, holy cow, that's been in there all this time.
Almost fever dreamish.
Yeah, yeah. So what was the musical world like for you as a child? What was the background of your home's music, your family's music? Was there lots on the radio?
I was the kid of two intellectuals who were very well educated, very bright and intelligent people. And Dad was a Lutheran minister, my mom a professor of English literature. And I don't believe I listened to anything pop,
really,
or contemporary until my late teen years, perhaps when I was a junior in high school. And it was always classical for my family.
Okay, so there was music being played around the house. It was classical music.
24
was
hours
music.
A day. Oh, well, not when we were sleeping, but during the daytime hours, the Magnavox stereo in the living room was cranking out WGMS in Washington, D.C.
Were you aware of the other worlds of music that were developing around the edges of that?
Absolutely. And I was aware of it, and I had a very a condescending attitude about it.
Oh, really?
So what did I do? I went on to make a life's career.
Yeah, out of it.
Out of the very stuff I shamed.
Can you remember the first music that moved you, and you can't say your mom singing to you?
Motown.
Motown.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can tell you categorically that the songs by the Supremes, by Marvin Gaye, and that period was, I consider to be, some of the greatest American music ever written and produced. And it was simple. It was beautiful. It was simple. It was full of heart. And it, for all intents and purposes, it was made to move you, and sometimes on the very basis of levels.
What was the pivot between your classical musical world and the pop music world? At what point did you lose your highbrow thoughts?
An AM daytime radio station in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania called WEO, W-E-E-O. it was the top 40 radio station, and it went on the air, I think, my junior year of high school. And all of a sudden, everybody tuned it in and listened to it. It was the greatest thing that ever came along in the history of my hometown.
What grade would you have been in?
I'd have been junior in high school.
Did you feel guilty at first? Did you try to pass judgment on your contemporaries?
No, it was amazing how able I was to dismiss all of my previous prejudices. I did it pretty quickly, as a matter of fact. Of course, it was the cool thing to do, and that's what being a junior in high school is all about, is fitting in with your peers, and I worked really hard at that.
Did you have a favorite band at that point in time? I mean, what was your sort of first favorite band outside of the world of, you know, classical?
I think probably the music of Elton John. I remember Your Song specifically as being the first pop song I ever heard that I just was blown away by, and it was Your Song by Elton John. I loved that song. I adored it, and I still adore it. I still get chills when I hear that song.
Isn't it crazy how music does that?
It does it to you because that's what it's made to do.
Right.
That's why we embrace it, and that's why we love it and listen to it. It's all the way back to the first days of the first time somebody banged a gong. It's designed to get reaction from humans, and that's what it does. And it's never lost that. Even in its most computerized state as it is today, it still does the same thing.
Isn't it wild? And it's, you know, I have a memory of being at a concert up in North Florida, outdoor concert, and there was a band, one of the early bands was playing, and it was not they were not playing music that the crowd recognized because they were an up and coming band. They were playing original music. But I had this thought where, you know, if one of the guitarists, if he hit a wrong note or two in a row, the whole audience would know if it was like out of key and out, you know, if it was out of place. And that's like magic. Like, we don't know your song. We don't know where it's going. But there's a way you can do it wrong that we would all in real time hear.
Yeah, but you know, there's other musicians on the stage would probably throw him a glance pretty quickly. If he
oh, of course. Of course. It's just something so deep about music that there's a form and a structure and something to it that ties it all together.
Absolutely unquestionable. I was a music major in college for my first year until I finally realized that I didn't have a whole lot of musical talent. I played the French horn, of all things.
Oh, wow.
And I learned very quickly that my sister got all the musical talent. She's a teacher of the flute at a university in my hometown. And I learned early on that it's more challenging mathematically than I ever wanted to embrace it
to be a good point.
A musician. And I am absolutely horrible at mathematics. I'm absolutely horrible at counting, and therefore I was a terrible, terrible musician and a lazy one who didn't want to practice either.
Must not take math to make donuts.
You got to get your ingredient measurements right. That's all you got to deal with.
There's a device for that. Okay, well, let's get to your first song. And you can either tell us your story and then we can hear it, or you can listen to it with me and our listeners, and then you can tell your story.
Well, I probably ought to tell you the story first because the timing is convoluted. The timing is – the song is from 1971, but it takes me back to the 1960s, the middle to late 1960s. In particular, that I was born and raised in a little eastern West Virginia town about an hour outside of Washington, D.C. And I remember in the 60s, in the late 60s, I remember – the horrible experiences that the country was going through. It was grappling its issues with racial strife and grappling with issues of the Vietnam War. I mean, our cities were burning in 1968. And I remember that when I first heard this song, it blasted me back 3 or 4 years. And then, since I was being raised by two of the most liberal individuals in the planet, I did have a social conscience, and I still do have an enormous social conscience. And this song really raised it for me. It really pointed out what we had been through. And I think that of all the Motown tunes, of all the Motown work, I think that was done by Marvin Gaye is among the most remarkable and lyrical and touching stuff, but this one is so socially relevant, and it still is today.
All right. This is What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, in case you hadn't already put that together. It's Bob Grissinger's first song on this episode of Three Song Stories.
There's too many of you to cry.
You know, normally I let the guest talk after the first song, but I just got to say, as someone who was born just after that song came out and only knows that era in principle and is now living through this era and trying to imagine what a song like that would feel like, it's really powerful.
Was there ever an instance where more humanity came through in a simple recorded track with so much soul as that song by Marvin Gaye? I think he was a remarkable talent. Remarkable talent. Record company hated that record. They didn't want to release it. Recorded it in Detroit. Hated it. Thought it was preachy. Thought it was difficult. It wasn't, you know, hand clapping Supremes, and it was a difficult song for them to do. They released it anyway, and wow, did they get a shock. They got quite a shock. I think it was the beginning of Motown's step toward real, true relevance. And I mean relevance in the social aspect.
How much or at what point in time did you enter radio?
Very close to the time this song came out, about actually 1973. I was a freshman in college, and guess where I went to work? Guess where my first radio station job was? WEO in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania.
Do you remember the first time maybe that you got to put the needle down on that track as a DJ that was running the ship?
Not that particular song. I'm sure I played it. I had to have played it because it was such a smash, and I was on a top 40 radio station in 1973. That song was out in 71, so that would be what we called recurrence or a new oldie or whatever the terminology was at the time. And I remember playing about the same 20 records over and over again, and then occasionally we got to play an older song, and that one would have been in that category for sure.
How long were you at that station?
4 years. It morphed into a full-time job. I became the production director, and then I went on to other radio stations, and most all of them were top 40 or adult contemporary stations, and basically spent my time acting like an idiot on the radio. That was my entire goal.
You pulled it off. How often does Marvin Gaye and Motown enter your playlist, as we call them today?
It's on my playlist at my shop.
It's on your playlist at your shop?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's on my playlist in my shop. It's on my Apple Tunes playlist. I play it all the time. I adore that song.
Do you keep up with contemporary pop music?
I don't. And I don't because it is not it's not the living I practice anymore. And I will tell you that I wasn't a great consumer of it when I was in the radio business. It was work. It's like I don't eat a lot. I don't eat as many donuts as I used to eat.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my weight doesn't allow me to eat as many donuts as I used to. But the fact is that I think when you do it for a living, you don't consume it, and as much as you perceive that other people should. And I did listen to the radio. I mean, it was my job. And at one time, I think here in Fort Myers, I was the director of programming for 8 different radio stations in the building. And then a change in FCC law made it impossible for that to continue, and there was a lot of upheaval in the FCC, and I was back to the one radio station, and that's where I was when I left that company in 2006.
What was your track between WEO?
WEO.
WEO and Wink. Like, what was the stepping stone that links WEO, those two stations?
WEO's was the top 40 daytime radio station. You remember the daytimers? They could only be on the air when you had light in the sky.
Oh.
And you could go on the air at in December in my neck of the woods. You couldn't go on the air till 7:45 in the morning. You had to sign off at 4:45 in the afternoon.
Oh.
In the wintertime, in the summertime, you had a really long broadcast day. So at WEO, I did that for 4 years, and then I went to work for WFMD in Frederick, Maryland, on the suburban Washington station. Went and put a new radio station on in West Virginia, in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Went to Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, to put a 50,000-watt FM station on the air. Ended up coming to Port Charlotte and working at a small AM FM radio station there as a 28-year-old single man running a big band radio station in Port Charlotte. At the time, I think Charlotte County was the oldest per capita county in the United States, or it was close to it.
Yeah, it's,
I wasn't a good fit. But I did that for 4 years, and then I ended up at Wink.
Can we return real quickly to the daytimer concept? What was the rationale behind that? What was the programming difference between the daytime and the nighttime?
Well, AM radio, as I understood it, if you broadcast during the day, your signal was eaten up by the sun.
Ah, right.
And at night,
stratospheric,
it went up and bounced off of something. There was the McKinley Heaviside Layer, and there was all kinds of science and stuff.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, and that's why AM radio stations, a lot of AM radio stations are required to reduce their power at night because their signal goes a lot farther, and I believe that was the concept. So you had daytime radio stations that were only licensed on daytime channels.
Understood. I read a story not too long ago about some, and you've probably heard this too, there was some big Midwest station that was so powerful in the early days of AM radio that on some days you can like pick it up in Japan. I mean, it just would go everywhere.
Very likely because it bounced all over the place. FM radio goes in a beam and it doesn't follow the contours of the earth. AM radio bounces around in the atmosphere.
There's your radio little lesson for the day, listeners.
Very unscientific because it came from a very unscientific mind, and I trust you. I don't know how accurate that description
we are not claiming to be. Okay, let's get back to the songs that didn't make your list. Oh. What were the like? What was the number four that had to just go?
Mm. Through the Fire by Chaka Khan,
because
I consider her to be one of the greatest vocalists of the 20th century. The woman can do everything and anything with her voice, and I like that performance. But it is a sentimental thing, and I tried to steer. You specifically said, let's steer away from what you danced at your wedding or what the
right.
real sentimental gooey. Gooey things. And that one ended up in the cutting room floor. I think she is a remarkable singer. As you can tell, I'm a very big fan of soulful vocals.
Uh-huh.
Marvin Gaye and Chaka Khan and those people. Another song by Art Garfunkel, who I adored because I thought The Boxer was a classic song. Of course, Bridge Over Troubled Waters, a song by him called Travelin' Boy, which I always played as the last song before I left my job at a radio station going to a new career. That was my parting song. So it was a very, I considered that to be very dramatic, and I'm sure all of that was totally lost on the listeners. I had no idea what I was doing or
that doesn't really matter.
Probably didn't care at all. But I thought it was very moving on my part, and of course it wasn't. But
over the years, I'm sure you got to meet a lot of musicians, a lot of Lee's acts. Are any of the people who are on our shortlist, your shortlist today, people who you got to meet from radio? Do you have a story you can tell us from that?
Yeah, I got to meet Elton John. I think that was a real highlight to meet Elton John. I mean, he is as big a superstar as you can possibly get. And I think probably the most bizarre part of that whole experience was that when we were all ushered into the room, there were maybe 50, maybe 75, I don't really remember, program directors from various radio stations in the Southeast. We were all ushered into a room and we were told by the record promoter at the time, the label promoter, that we were not to look above his eyebrows. And, well, I wondered why that was. And apparently the story became that Elton was very, very touchy about his toupee. And you weren't supposed to look above his eyebrows. Of course, the minute you walked in and you saw Elton John, your eyes all – everybody's eyes went right above his eyebrows to gawk at his
toupee. They should have said, don't look at his belt buckle.
He was never appeared to be offended. He was lovely and he was very kind and shook your hand and had a real, real kind way about him. And that was a great experience. And we got to hear a little mini concert by him, so I enjoyed that a lot.
So, as it were, song number two is one of his songs. Why did you choose Tiny Dancer?
I kind of think it represents the radio business that I was in. It's an entertainment song. It's about entertainment. It's about Bernie Taupin wrote it for his girlfriend at the time, I believe, wrote it or dedicated it to him, to her. And it was about all of the chicks that Bernie Taupin got to meet when he was in the music business. And I can't say that I had a lot of chicks hanging around, but it was the radio business, and you did get to meet a lot of interesting and fascinating people. And I like this song particularly because I think it's, well, I'll just say it bluntly, probably the greatest pop rock record ever produced. It's just a phenomenal piece of work. It's phenomenally produced. It was recorded at, I think it was Trident Studios in London, where the entire album Mad Men Against the Water, Across the Water, was recorded. And there is everything anybody could ever want in a rock ballad in Tiny Dancer.
All right, let's hear it. This is Elton John's Tiny Dancer. You're listening to Three Song Stories. It's biography through music.
I love Elton John. I think he is a phenomenal talent, and I believe that probably the only other choice of song I would have picked beside that one, well, maybe two others, but Leave On, Tiny Dancer, your song, all three just make me – give me the chills.
You ever see him in concert?
Oh, yeah. As the hardest working man in the business.
Yeah.
I remember he was I think his concert went about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
The one that I saw, of course, aside from the private concert that we were privileged to see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was, I think it was at in Tampa, if I'm not mistaken. It was probably within the last 20 years. But he let his band go take an hour break, and he sat up there on stage and played the piano and continued to do the entire concert.
What a treat.
It went on forever. And it didn't feel like it went on forever.
Sure.
It seemed like it was 20 minutes. Hardworking man.
It seems like you would have probably gotten to see a lot of live acts over the years. Is that always a part of your world?
I didn't.
Oh, really?
I know. And I'll tell you why. It was too loud.
Huh.
I was never really one into mind-numbing volume. But I enjoy studio music more than I enjoy live music. And if the musician is really great, he can do the live stuff as well as
right.
And make it sound as good as it does in the studio. But I don't think that happens as often as it should.
Where are you at musically today? You say you don't really keep up with modern pop music, but what's sort of maybe a newer band that you have, you know, come across or has entered your playlist or have any?
I love this isn't very new. I love the Groove Armada. I think they're wonderful. I think that album that they had that had I See You Baby Shaking That Blankety Blankety Blank. And
there's a podcast. There was Bob.
I love them. I think they're really remarkable. But you know, no, that's as current as I get, and that's probably what 15 years ago, 10 years ago. Was out.
Can you recommend a song or a band to our listeners who you think would not have crossed their radar? Do you have something out there that is something you latched onto at some point during your life that you still listen to that never made it to the, you know, the top of the culture?
Art Garfunkel solo albums. I love I think it's a South African group called the Lighthouse Family. I think it's just wonderful to listen to. My little six-year-old loves the song Lifted by them. Because when she was two, I used to play that song and run around and lift her up every time they sang those words. So that's one. That's probably the most the biggest example. I liked them very much. They had some very minor pop hits, but never were very very strong in the commercial music business.
How big is the playlist at Bennett's? Sounds like it might not be very big.
About 950.
Okay, that's pretty
songs.
Big.
Yeah,
it all
repeats,
curated by you.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. And I it's all about. And it's the same as my donuts. I make the donuts because they're the donuts that I like to eat, and I make the put the playlist together because those are the songs I like to hear. But fortunately, I get a lot of compliments about the music. It's different. It isn't, you know, a packaged. Music subscription from Muzak or wherever, and you end up hearing things that you don't normally get to hear very frequently.
How did you wind up in donuts? I mean, that might be a slight departure for a music show, you know, a biography for music show, but
couldn't
but,
find any donut tunes.
Couldn't find, did you try?
Yeah, not very hard. Well, my brother-in-law and I decided to open a Bennett's, and it was initially going to be just a coffee shop. We're going to roast our own coffee.
Right, because Bennett's
fresh
roast.
Which we do, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, you know what? We need another cash cow. We need another side of the business that the two can bounce off of. So we're, you know, and it ended up being that way because 40% of what we of our sales is donuts and 40% of our sales is coffee.
Hmm.
And the rest
is
lunch
lobster, roll.
And lobster rolls and lunches and things like that. And so we just I'm just such a cooking fan. I have cooked all my life. I adore cooking. I love to eat, as you can tell by my stomach's girth. And the fact is that it's something that is the most spiritual thing in the world to me, is to stand behind a stove and whip up something delicious and eat it and share it with my family and my friends. That's the best experience. That's life.
You know, it must feel pretty good, too, when you've got people lined up literally around the corner on a Sunday or Saturday morning in season for your donuts.
People have a sweet tooth.
Okay, well, it is time for your last song. So what do you have for us?
This one was a little tough for me, and I wanted to make sure that I chose a song that reflected a couple of aspects of my life. One specifically was the fact that when I left the radio business – in 2006, after being called upstairs and being told by the general manager, Mob, we're going in a different direction now. And I knew exactly what that meant because I had done that many times to employees as well. I mean, that was my job. I have no ill feelings against the company that I worked for 22 years. But I knew that what that meant. But I never said another word on the radio. I was never back on the radio. I never got to say goodbye. That was in 2006, September 19th. I remember it real clearly. And I said to myself that I really would have liked to have uttered a few final words of gratitude, a few final words of stay where you are. This is a great radio station. This is a great company. These are great people. I have no anger or regrets. I enjoyed what I did. I was 54 years old at the time, and I was a morning guy on a hot AC top 40 radio station. So I probably had pretty much met the end of the road of my relevance as a morning show talent. So I understood it, but I never got to say that to my audience. And I missed that opportunity, and I say that to a lot of people in person today who walk into my shop and say, hey, I remember you on the radio. Whatever happened? Why did you just disappear? You just left. And of course, there were newspaper articles and there was a lot of uproar by some people, and really was never worth the uproar. It was all about moving on and going on to new stages in your life. And the song is also about my life as a closeted man who had been living in conflict with himself. I was raised by liberal people. I had a lot of friends, and my parents had a lot of friends, but I was never out on the radio at all, never. And I regret that. And that's one thing that I wish I could have done more openly and honestly on the radio when I was in the morning show with Gina Birch. She certainly was a good friend, and she continues to be. She's my little sister. Probably going to be at the shop when I get back there this morning. And that is important to me, to be able to express. And this song expresses that level of freedom, not only from a perspective that I didn't have that chain self-imposed on the radio, but it's cathartic. It's freeing to be able to say that right here and now, that my husband and my six-year-old daughter are very, very critical and crucial and loving parts of my life. And George Michael was a man who was so strong and so capable of expressing those things every day of his life. He got in trouble for it a couple of times. But this song is an anthem, and it's an anthem to me personally and for my husband and for my little six-year-old.
Okay, well, we're going to hear it. This is Freedom by George Michael. You're listening to Three Song Stories. That's Freedom by George Michael. It's my guest today, Bob Grissinger's third song on Three Song Stories. That would have been in rotation for you at Wink, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, it was 90.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as someone who was in the closet, what was it like to play songs by people like George Michael and to kind of have to navigate around that in your head?
Well, I was skilled at that. I lived my whole life like that.
Right.
Not only just
it wasn't
on
just,
the radio.
It wasn't, yeah, right, right.
Yeah, pretty much. But listening to songs by George Michael you didn't know. We weren't proud and out, and I don't think George Michael in 1990 was proud and out either.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's so much about him that was fascinating to me. I mean, if you've seen the movie that was recently on, I think it's been on HBO a lot lately. I think it's called Freedom, as a matter of fact. I mean, here was a man who was a closeted singer in a very homophobic music world, exceedingly homophobic. The radio industry, the music side of the radio industry is exactly the same way. And you have this enormous pressure to walk the straight line, so to speak. And George Michael not only bucked that attitude in the music business, he literally told his huge label to go take a flying leap and walked away from its contract and didn't do any work for a period of a couple of years. Just on principle. There's a principled man. He was a very principled man. And impressive character.
So the world's changed a lot since you left radio in 2006 in terms of people being willing to be open and honest about who they are, but also just other ways that technology and things have changed music. Do you ever think what would it be like to be still doing it today? I mean, what are the things that you reflect on?
I don't know that the radio industry exists as it did 15 or 20 years ago. I left the radio industry in 12 years ago in 2006. And deregulation in the 1980s did some real serious damage to the commercial radio business. Did away with the Fairness Doctrine, did away with the equal time provisions of the Fairness Doctrine. And I think that it did away with the ownership limitations. A company can now own thousands and thousands of radio stations.
And often
I'm
do.
Specifically of commercial, the commercial aspect,
sure.
not the nonprofit and non-commercial such as this one. But the fact of the matter is that has damaged the industry so much from a perspective of variety and a perspective of creativity and a perspective it's just not what it used to be. And I guess you can always whine about things the way they used to be and were always better. But I'm not really sure that that was 100% of the cause, because the internet has certainly changed things dramatically as well. I mean, the YouTubes and the Apple, iTunes and all of the various ways of getting music now. And kids can program their own stuff. Why would they want Mr. Disc Jockey sitting there picking up tunes and playing them for them without them having much of a choice? It's very different these days.
So how old is your daughter?
Six. We adopted her at well, she was – we first met her at 5 days. She was 5 days old and took her home and gave her a bath in the kitchen sink.
What does she – so six. Has she like glommed on to any musical stylings? Yeah, it is. What's her musical upbringing been like so far?
Piano lessons.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely, piano lessons. We took her to those music classes where she gets to run around and dance and sing and do little kids' songs and things along those lines. But I don't believe she's latched on to any specific genre yet.
Nothing. She's singing in the car, too, or anything like that?
She's singing in the car mostly songs that she has I'm trying to think what she has listened to and what she sings. It's mostly the kiddie stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of the things that she's learning to play on the piano.
Right.
But I what will she grasp onto as a consumer of music? I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to watch that as it develops.
Oh, it is. I'm trying to do the math myself because my daughter's getting ready to turn 13, and of course now she's got all kinds of stuff that's hers, you know, that she's glommed onto. But I'm trying to think of when it first happened. But it's not. I think you're not far away from something getting into her head.
We've been a little protective of television, music.
Yeah.
I think you want to, as they're young and they're developing, I think you want to make sure you police it a little bit. I don't think you need to, hold your child away from any television or any radio or any music of any kind. But I think it's important to make sure you know what they're listening to and what they're consuming.
Well, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to pass along as we round out this episode?
Gratitude, Mike. Thanks for letting me be here. It's an enormous honor to have asked me to come in and talk about this stuff. It's all about how you let music reflect on your life. And I think that those three songs that you let me pick, those are really the soundtrack of my life.
Well, it's really been my pleasure. So I want to thank you, Bob, once again, known as C. David Bennett on the radio waves for many years and the force behind Bennett's Fresh Roast in downtown Fort Myers. Thanks for doing this, Bob. I truly appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
We make three song stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio in Fort Myers. The show is produced, directed, and co-created by Richard Chin Kui. Tara Callaghan and Anna Bay Hirano are our online content producers. Chris Duffus is our executive producer. Our theme music was created by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. For my parting tune this week, I'm going back to the late 1980s and quite likely Link 96.9 because that pretty much was the radio when I was a teen. This song took the world by storm, later to become mocked, and I wasn't necessarily a huge fan because I was mostly listening to The Police at the time. But while this song is proof positive of the power of music to not only connect us to our pasts, but in some cases get us to almost even believe in what might not even be there. I liked this song because my girlfriend Paige loved this song. This is Girl, You Know It's True by Milli Vanilli. This is Three Song Stories. I'm Mike Canary. Keep listening.
Next time on Three Song Stories.
All of a sudden, the intro to Harry Hood comes on, and my daughter says, "We gotta find Daddy!" And then I see Chris from the other ends of, like, the fairgrounds running, like, he's saying the same thing. "I gotta find Emerson!" And they get there right as the band starts singing, "Harry!" And then Emerson and Chris go into this Harry Hood moment, and they run up to the front, and they start dancing, and I thought, this is what music does, right?